Welcome to today's Case Study Museum interview, one of eight recorded for the AMM Essential Questions Program series. Over the course of this series, we're finding out how museums are faring today, 3 years after the start of the pandemic and civic unrest following George Floyd's murder. We'll be chatting with eight different museums across the Midwest about what they've learned about themselves and their audiences, what changes they've made that have stuck, and what new models or approaches they've tried. These interviews are talk show style, featuring guest moderators. They are pre-recorded so that you can listen to them when it is convenient, and listeners will have the opportunity to ask questions of our museum panelists during live Q&A sessions this spring, so stay tuned for that. Today's feature museum is the Eitelsorg Museum in Indianapolis, Indiana. Today's interviewer is Bob Beattie, historian and principal at Lyndhurst Group. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Bob.
All right, y'all. Let's talk a little bit about the non-elephant in the room. We're about to go into the fourth year of dealing with the COVID pandemic and the fallout. All of us on this call, I'm sure, remember, we're a month before that happened, but we were all watching it. But it really did shake up our world, not only our world, but certainly our museum world and what we did and how we did it. So the first thing I want to talk about at the Eitelsorg is talk about how, what you've learned from the last couple of years has impacted what you're doing today. This is, we always call it a new normal. I don't know if it's a new abnormal or continuing abnormal, but the bottom line is y'all learned some stuff. You learned some stuff about your audience. You learned some stuff about artists and artist communities. You learned some stuff probably about your role in the community at a moment when that is. So I'm just going to open it up a little bit. What have you learned? What is going on? And I'm happy if you guys just want to start talking. I don't know, it's hard sometimes if you want to raise a hand and I can call on y'all, but overall, things have changed. What are some things that have changed, and what have you learned? How have you adapted as an institution?
I'll jump in with one maybe more kind of functional, practical thing, but the power of online meetings. We developed the new Native American exhibit without ever meeting the exhibit team, the firm that we work with, Origin Studios in Canada, without ever meeting them face to face. It's a 12,000 square foot exhibit. Doreen curated. It's a massive undertaking. And we were able to accomplish what we did online through meetings online. And I think that opened up a kind of a new world in that maybe you don't need to spend all those resources to meet in person, or to bring a speaker in for a program, that you can be very effective and efficient and create something wonderful and share it with your public online. I think a lot of museums experienced that, but
y'all have had some
big for us
with that. So was this exhibition already in planning stages when this started, Doreen? Like, okay, so you had to go from this normal project plan to moving online and making major decisions. That's new for all of us. And that's not typical with something that's this big, right? 12,000 square feet. I mean, there's entire museums that have that much exhibit space. So Doreen, how did that work? Like, talk me through a little bit how you made that shift.
Sure. So our exhibit design firm, Origin Studios, were very organized and helped us with the timeline. And I feel like we were very adaptable. We just jumped right in and used the technology, Zoom or WebEx or Teams, and just got in the habit of, working from home and having meetings several times a week. And, before then we had been larger group meetings at the museum. But I feel like I'm losing my stream, and I'm glad that this is not live.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask, you're the curator of this exhibit. It's a big deal to change how you're approaching it right at the beginning. But what you're telling me, I think, is you guys adapted really well. You adapted well. It worked. I do think that's something I noticed too. Like, and Alyssa, what you know, from a programming perspective, right? All of a sudden, all of this caterwauling about museums and digital is, you know, we made this switch. All of a sudden, we had to make a switch. And what I saw, a lot of museums were just putting content out to keep us occupied for those first couple months. And all of a sudden, a whole bunch of people who were sick in the muds about it were like, oh, wait, there's an audience here and it works. So, you know, Alyssa, how does that work for you then as we're making this transition? Not necessarily just the exhibition, but in terms of programming and everything, your whole mindset had to change.
Yeah, exactly. I came to this position in late 2019, so just prior to the pandemic. And I came with all kinds of goals for, you know, change that I wanted to see made. And one of those was exploring more online content delivery. Well, guess what? We were suddenly thrust into the abyss along with everyone else. So I see it, you know, that's one of the great things that came out of this terrible experience, is that museums sometimes move at a glacial pace when it comes to change, and this was not the case. So, you know, we jumped in and tried everything, just like a lot of museums. You know, we had pre-recorded videos of our gallery discussions. We dipped into virtual programs with artist talks and roundtable discussions, the works. We put out videos for kids, you know, doing art projects at home. So we dipped our toes into sort of everything because we wanted to keep ourselves out there in front of our audiences. And exactly what you had mentioned, Bob, happened for us too. We discovered that we had, you know, retained our audiences that were hungry for that interaction still, but we found new ways to deliver these programs and exhibits to them. And we found this whole new audience. You know, we had a global audience, which was amazing to see at some of our virtual programs. So I think, you know, all of that was change for the better and helped us all to be more flexible and able to react more quickly. And so I think that that's going to be valuable going forward into the future.
Just quick question. And this is a personal somewhat thing, but I know that as museums have gotten back to more in-person programming, that has made the digital programming has audiences have not necessarily come back. Have you found that as well, in-person audiences or have not come back the way they used to?
So we found with the virtual programming, there was a point in 2021, 2022, where people just were kind of like,
done.
Yeah, I'm ready to get back in person. And so we pulled back on that, of course, but we've still found some really popular like live streaming our large events and discussions. That's been a really popular addition that we wouldn't have been able to provide in the past. And we've continued with virtual meetings with like our book club and virtual artist talks. So we're still able to engage those artists who, you know, are around North America that we wouldn't necessarily have the funding to bring in person. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We made the transition back to in-person offerings when that demand increased.
Then let me back up and talk about, like, what did you learn about the artist communities you engaged with when this happened? Doreen, I'm going to pull you in, Doreen, when I can, and I don't want to, if you're on the spot, say, pass the mic, you know, like I did last time, but how has that changed? And really, you know, we did adapt, I think. Those first couple of months were very confusing for all of us, and the last couple of years have been very confusing, but we did find new ways to interact with our communities. And in an art museum, and particularly one that does Indigenous art or Native American art, there are some crucial relationships you have to be developing. So how does that work in the new normal, or how did you adapt that? What did you learn about that process?
Right. So I think many of us who are more social, we were just really glad to be able to have the technology to see one another and talk to one another. And not worry about, finances. We're able to just immediately connect and not worry about flying someone in. I look at the COVID-19 pandemic as a positive because it was a gift of more time and a chance to connect with people. And I've sort of missed that. I mean, we're We still have that with our programs and our exhibitions and, you know, reaching out to our communities to work with them. We relied a lot on our Native American Advisory Council to advise us. We had wanted to do a lot more consulting with local and regional tribes, but because of the pandemic, we could not do that as much. So, my experience with having meetings online been very positive.
Sounds like you could cast a wider net at that point because you're not struggling with the, I can see that. Okay, let's move over to really a question. I guess it's really not new, a renewed commitment to keeping diversity, DEAI. And you know, the way I look at it is I always say it, diversity is passive, inclusion is active, right? It's the act of making people feel like they belong. Equity, accessibility helps us to that. Equity is our goal. And obviously it's a twitchy goal, right? We're never gonna achieve equity. We understand that. But y'all have renewed your commitment as a result of this. And a lot of institutions have. So I wanna quote something I found on your website a little bit about your the new exhibition. And what is the name of the exhibition? I don't have it sitting in front of me. The one that you, the 12,000 square foot. Does it have a official name? Let's use that.
The Expressions of Life, Native Art in North America. And okay, just a little note, the Expressions of Life term or name is something that came from our advisory council, our Native Advisory Council.
So Expressions of Life was in the Native Council, Native Advisory Council, sort of that was in the process when all this started or stopped. But there's a quote on your website for that piece. I'm sorry, when it started, when the world stopped and when we started the new normal. Art is an essential part of being. And I that quote just poked me in the eye to talk a little bit about that. Is that a new phrase? I like the Expressions of Life. So talk a little bit about how Expressions of Life reflects the commitment to diversity and inclusion. Art is an essential part of being. And you mentioned on the website that Native art has always been there and always will be there kind of deal. I wrote it down, so I didn't write the whole quote down. So art is an essential part of being. Talk to me. How does that reflect how y'all are going forward here? Doreen, please.
Sure. So that is a quote from our previous curator of Native American arts, histories, and culture, Scott Shoemaker, who's Miami Tribe of Oklahoma. And that, I feel like, was one of the big key phrases, statements that we use to inspire us. And then, you know, with us being an art museum, you know, we understand we have visitors who are fans of older artwork, newer in between. And really, we want to share with our visitors that, you know, Native art is on a continuum. You know, what is old informs the new and vice versa. Things that were made hundreds of years ago were contemporary at that time. And then things made in the future, hundreds of years from now, will have roots in tradition. And you know, just all in that ball of loveliness sprouted many ideas and guided us through our process. Elisa, I don't know if you wanted to share that too.
You said that very, very well. I think, you know, the idea of putting both the artist and the art central within the exhibit was paramount and differed from our previous installation, which I think we may be talking about that a little bit later on. But it really, I don't know, it gave us a grounding and a focus. And I think the message comes through in the exhibit that was created, that art really is an essential part of being.
Well, so go ahead and, you know, explain how this one differs
from
what y'all had. I think that's a important thing at this point, because, so let me just tell you real quick, as a museum visitor, right? Art, I need art explained to me a little bit so I can see it. I need it interpreted. Art on a wall does not cut it for me. So knowing about the artist and what that person is doing with their art is a vital part of my Bob's understanding, right? So, but I also know that's not necessarily how we have done things in the art world, certainly not how we've done things in the history museum world either. So you made a change. What is that like and why and how? And talk a little bit about that.
So before, the Idle Dog is going to be 33 years in June. The Native American galleries hadn't changed much, with the exception of doing a more localized focus on the local Native peoples of Indiana in 2002. So the galleries were presented through geographic range. And obviously that is no longer appropriate, or it's kind of, you know, related to outmoded thinking of like 20th century, earlier 20th century, presenting Native peoples as just groups. We wanted to talk more about the diversity of Native peoples. We wanted to make sure we included Canada, you know, in reference a lot of our First Nation brothers and sisters, because, you know, North America is first and foremost and always will be Native land. And so we wanted to discuss the exhibit, the art, through themes, and we developed three themes of relation, continuation, and innovation. And I could probably talk forever about those three different themes. I don't want to get us off topic, but I feel like with this exhibit, we really wanted to provide a voice for Native peoples to tell their own stories, because they are the authority of their own stories. And that's something we're very cognizant of, especially when we do our DEAI work.
Just going to add that with the older exhibit, you didn't really get a sense of living people, contemporary Native people. It was pretty devoid of the people and of artists. There was contemporary work in the older gallery, but no connection to the artists or the stories of the people who created the art. And so that was something that was a big change and a big emphasis for us.
Alyssa, I don't want to leave you out on this programming wise. How has this renewed commitment or this new idea, how has it impacted programming? And let's talk a little bit too about how is audience reception. I'm a music historian, and so the audience's reception of our work is a part, right, of the dialogue. So give me a little bit on that.
Well, from a programmatic perspective, it hasn't really changed. We've always sort of approached our programs as a relationship with either the Native artists that we're bringing in, or our guest speaker, or our community collaborators. So from that perspective, the exhibit didn't really change how we approached programming. It gave us a lot of opportunity to do programming last year. We had a big summer of celebrating Native and Indigenous artists, which was amazing. Concerts and artist demonstrations and workshops. So that was very exciting to coincide with the opening of this gallery. From an audience perspective, we were very fortunate in that we got some funding from IMLS to bring in an evaluator. And his main project was a study related to the Native galleries, the new installation. So he was able to do some observational study, an interview study. So we got great feedback. Respondents overwhelmingly had a positive experience in the gallery. The diversity element that Doreen spoke to earlier, the diversity of Native art and artists, that came through strongly. And I think one of the things from my perspective that I'm really excited about that came out in that survey was that 69% of our visitors expressed concrete intentions to apply what they experienced and learned in the exhibit. So they were ready to go out and make change, which I think is fantastic.
But as you y'all pulled this together, that's a great question. That's an awesome, I mean, there's not an educator who wouldn't wish we could do a follow-up study with that and figure out exactly what that is, right? Or yeah. Actually any museum professional, because that's good data. Yeah. And that's the data that as a museum person, I've been dying for most of my life, right? All of us have, right? But that's a good number to start with. Was that a curatorial decision, I should say, or an institutional decision to approach the work that way, rather than to approach the exhibit, And I'm not talking programs at this point, but did when y'all approached exhibits before, was it more, okay, we're just going to put stuff here and hope people learn it, but you have an intention that they're going to do something with this regarding this topic. Is that new for the institution, or talk to me about that process with the institution? Because that's a change from my vantage point, what I would understand, right?
It's always been an underlying goal, and in some cases previously has been reality, but it's been inconsistent. So the reception of the grant was huge for us, and to have someone on staff for the better part of a year, just exclusively someone very knowledgeable and experienced on staff, focusing exclusively on evaluation and on that exhibit, was tremendous and something we hope to be able to continue. You know, as with everything else, funding is challenging, but I'll hand it back to Alyssa if you have anything to add.
Yeah, I don't, maybe Doreen can add, were there thoughts that the Native Advisory Council had regarding some of those messages that they wanted to get across?
So, you know, being in the Midwest, there are some people who are under the impression that because there aren't any maybe reservations in their own state, that Native peoples are no longer living, or they're out west or some other place. And we wanted to, you know, in consultation with our Native American advisory, you know, help people understand that actually Native peoples are everywhere and part of communities and cities and towns and rural areas. And so it was important with the evaluation, try and see if we can, with some of our theme, with the themes and with our didactics and we have digital panels and I'm losing the term,
digital hubs.
The digital hubs, right. And these wonderful low-tech interactives. So to have a staff member dedicated to talking with visitors and following them and seeing what was working and what people got really excited about, I think not only made me feel really good, but the advisory council as well, just feeling like, you know, it's I feel like a long time coming with having a Native American galleries. You know, it's, you have to make a decision. Are you going to be more culture-based, history-based, art-based? As a Native person, generally, you're more or less, whether you want to or not, teaching people about your own culture or history. And, you know, it's just about striking a balance, I think.
Doreen, I want to highlight that because I think that's a really important point that you just made, that is something that Native people deal with when you come into these institutional spaces, is that I have to inform, you know, and it's not I have to, but that is what happens. And it is part of when you interact with other cultures and you listen and you do the exchange. But by the same token, I know what you're saying is so many of our visitors, so many of our staff, myself included, right? We just don't have a real deep understanding of the Native experience and how wide it is. And I've noticed that with regard to institutions, is we are alive, we are contributing, and this is what that is. And that seems to me to be a really important part of these exhibitions, at least from my perspective broadly. And it sounds like that was an intention you guys took to this exhibition.
It definitely was an intention, because, you know, when you, well, not everyone's going to experience this, but per se, when you are creating a new exhibition and something that is so large as 12,000 square feet and so important and central to the mission and represents a large part of your permanent collection, and you feel like, you know, there's all this time and energy dedicated, a lot of money raised, you want to try and get it all right. So it's very heartening to me to know that visitors, 69%, felt like they learned something and they wanted to share with their friends and family. And I feel like we'll have people coming back and spending more time. Now, I built in rotations for the light sensitive artwork. So, you know, every few months there's, you know, similar things, but different that that will be on exhibit. And, you know, we'll have, we'll always have something going on upstairs, program related as well. So I feel like as an institution, we're very pleased that people are happy and engaged with the new exhibition.
You know, what I hear a lot of, and I think this is the important part for these types of conversation, is intentionality in your approach. And I just want to sum up a little bit as I'm listening to what you're saying, because evaluation to the level you did it is really hard to be able to do it. Even for an institution as large as Idle York had to get external funding for it. But if I'm another institution, I think what you're saying is to sit down and write down what your intention is and lead to that. You're not necessarily going to be able to prove that 69% of your visitors are going to be doing action, but you're at least kind of leading them to that. So going back to my thing, there's various scales of how this is, but you're approaching diversity and inclusion with intentionality as an institution. And you redid this whole gallery, listening to your advisory, Native Advisory Committee. Any pushback, or what is the pushback from the board or administration when you made this decision to make this change? So we're a little bit out of the pandemic side, and we're really getting into this groundbreaking exhibition that y'all put together during this time period. Institutionally, talk to me about how this went, you know, with the board and with the decision makers as it went. Easy, difficult, challenging. How has all this gone from that perspective?
All of the above.
Good answer.
I would say with our administration, they were incredibly supportive, and our development team was incredibly supportive, and many of our board members. I think there are a few who it took a while to come around to the idea that we were telling the story in a different way, that there was a really strong emphasis on contemporary Native people and contemporary art, in addition to the wonderful collection of historic art that we have. Alyssa can speak to volunteers and guides, because she was the one that worked most closely with them, and I think had some both exciting positive things and some challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. Change is hard. Change is hard for everyone, especially if you're set in your ways. So it took a while. And I think the pandemic actually helped us in that regard, because we were all forced to change suddenly and be more flexible. So, with our volunteers specifically, I think once they saw that gallery in all of its glory and had a chance to really dive in, you know, any fears they might have harbored were alleviated. I think that it just took getting in there to see truly what was available in the gallery. And they really appreciate all of the different perspectives that are included in those digital hubs. In the videos, you hear directly from these artists about their experiences. And that's part of, you know, our training that we have incorporated all along in our guide training, our volunteer training. But to see it in action in the gallery, I think just took it to a whole nother level for them. So we got their buy-in.
Yeah. Yeah. Doreen?
We opened the galleries in tandem with our 30th anniversary of our annual Indian Art Market, and there were some artists who were part of our market who had artwork in the exhibition, and it was just amazing to hear them say, oh my gosh, wow, I'm in the exhibit, and, you know, my family's here, and, you know, or they post about it. Our evaluator did a lot of talking with them. The artists who were visiting and other people who were coming just for the celebration of the new galleries and for the market. And I feel like one of the proudest things of the exhibition for me is the fact that we're talking about living artists and supporting living artists. Like, actually showing and living and supporting the artists through our annual Indian Art Market. And, you know, talking about, yeah, we have these older items that are not, their names were not recorded because at the time they were collected, that wasn't a priority, but now things are changing and it's really important to purchase art from living artists and to record not only their names, but, you know, their socials, their Insta, you know, just to connect and that relatability, I feel like our visitors really connect with.
I have a side question, which is how long were y'all working with the advisory committee on these concepts? You know, how long is this whole process from when you started thinking about it until you launched the exhibit?
So I was hired in October 2016. And at the time, two curators I was working with, we were already talking about the reinstall. That was just the key word, reinstall, reinstall. So for many years, probably even before I got here, Alyssa, mm-hmm. who's been here longer than I have.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, continue.
I was just going to say the advisory council, Native Advisory Council, has been part of the museum. Certainly members have rotated on and off, but since the very beginning. So it wasn't, the advisory council wasn't put together just for this exhibit. It's
right.
a body that, you know, continues. And I know, you know, there were a number of things that they had been advocating for and changes that they hoped to see probably before the exhibit planning was deep into it. So it was exciting to have the opportunity to work more closely and deeply with them.
It sounds to me like each of y'all have had a pretty meaningful experience from dealing with this particular exhibition. And you know, any of us who understand art, Western American art or Native, you know, like you are changing how we do things by taking this approach. So the final question will sort of go for home. Like if you had could talk to other museum professionals, you had some counsel for how to make similar changes or how to incorporate some of these ideas. What are some things you would share with the field in terms of, you know, we could just talk about this exhibition or we could talk in general about y'all's approach?
Well, one thing I thought about was that progress, as Doreen and Alyssa have noted, progress can be slow. And sometimes it can be frustrating because you know where the institution should go or where you'd like to see a project go. But sometimes it may take a little longer to get there. So one thing I would say is to not be discouraged, which can be hard, but even a small step forward is progress. And, you know, I think that this exhibit has moved the needle a lot farther. And certainly the work of our DEAI council, that's a board staff council, has begun to be applied to many other areas of the museum. But it's the pace of progress, as you noted yourself, Bob, museums are
glacial.
Yeah. But you know, forward movement is what's most important, even if it's slow.
So excellent point.
And I would just add, yeah, from my perspective, I would say just jump in. The timing's never going to be right. The wording, you know, that you're putting together is never going to be perfect. You're never going to have enough resources. Don't let those things hold you back, especially when you're talking about building relationships with different communities. Reach out and just know those relationships take time to build and be willing to listen and be willing to give over some of the power that you have in your role in the museum and the institution to others in your community. I think that goes a long way in building trust and the long-term relationship.
Excellent. Doreen, you got some build on those or your own?
Sure. So I think working with any kind of group you might not be familiar with or who represents a small portion of your collection, just be really transparent and open and inviting. Feed people, that goes a long way. We all have a lot in common, more than we think. You know, we all love food. We all love family. We all love art, you know, some maybe not all the same, you know, maybe people like older things more than newer things, or maybe they don't know yet what they like, but just reach out to community members and, you know, just say, hey, we're trying to do this and love for you to participate. And yeah, I just feel like being very honest and open, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, you've mentioned transparency, and you know, it's a thread that kind of continues throughout, and it's an issue not just with Native communities, but it's a huge issue, obviously, with this one because of history, right? But I often use the term stewardship as an open hand, not the closed fist. What is it, you know, we can do? And you are, as an institution, stewarding these resources on behalf of a lot of different constituencies, if not just Indianapolis, right? You're a national institution that covers an international story if you're adding all of North America to it. And so transparency is an important part. Was there, and I'll sort of leave with this, was there some challenge with that? Or how have you overcome those challenges with your community? Think about it just for a bit in terms of transparency. I know, for example, when I used to work with African American community in the South, right, there was always a reluctance at first for the African American community to come work. And when I was a young man, and I was a little bit, I didn't understand it quite as well as I do now, right? I was like, wait, I'm sincere, I know what I'm doing, but that's not the case. There is a way to approach this. You've had a long track record with this advisory council. And they clearly are comfortable with the direction y'all have gone and what you're doing. So how are you staying transparent? Like, how does that, and maybe I've just done a whole soliloquy that doesn't matter, but talk about transparency. How does that matter in this issue, in this regard?
I would say one thing is that if you're inviting people in to advise, to collaborate, to partner with you in some way, you have to be willing to listen and really hear them and maybe go in a different direction from the story that you wanted to tell, because there's a redirection from the folks that you have invited to share their stories or to work with you on something. And I think sometimes that can be hard because you have a vision of where you're going and maybe it wants to bend, change. But if you've made the commitment to transparency and to working with community, working with advisory council and collaborators, then you have to be willing to listen to what they're saying in a big way.
Final thing. What problems are you still? No, that's excellent. That was excellent. No, it summed it up real well. What are some things you guys are still working on? I said, guys, I'm trying to scrub that stuff. I say y'all more than that. But what are some things y'all are working on now? Are there some things that you still haven't cracked that you're doing? Because it is good for folks to see, hey, even the idle jar struggles with, and I'm not telling you to, you know, share your dirty laundry, but you clearly have captured something. But in a big institution, my experience says, you know, those things take a little time to get elsewhere. So what else, without impugning anything, what are some other things y'all are working on or thinking about? What are some things that are maybe some stretch goals that you're wanting along these, you know, to continue this idea, this concept that you brought to the institution with this exhibition and its execution?
Well, I'll jump in. From the evaluation standpoint, there were, you know, obviously we all love the exhibit and it's near and dear to our hearts and it's fantastic and, you know, score high scores all around. But no, in all seriousness, there are some things that we need to work on to go back and say, okay, our visitors aren't understanding this concept that we were trying to convey here. How can we rework this in a way to get these points across? There are a number of things like that that we need to kind of go back through and figure out. And that's going to be long-term because, you know, resources are always an issue. And some of those fixes are quick and easy, and others are going to be more long-term. So taking that next step there, I would say, would be something that we would work toward.
Anything else for, you know, for the good of the order with that?
I would add one other thing that we have, Alyssa really has overseen some very successful community events over the years, in particular, a celebration of Juneteenth and a Day of the Dead celebration in usually late October, right before the event. And that celebration last year brought in, I think, our largest audience ever of 5,000 people. So clearly there's community interest and support because the events are developed in collaboration with partners. And, but why aren't we having opportunities to engage with those communities throughout the year? And that's something we really want to work on, because clearly there's interest, clearly folks will come if you have something that that resonates with them and that they feel that they want to engage with. So that's a big goal.
That's excellent. Doreen, you got any that you're thinking of, either institutional or with exhibition or other things? Some things you're not quite, you're pushing on some more?
Yes, so with the pandemic, you know, I think many institutions, museums, unfortunately had to lay off some people. And since then, everybody in every industry has had a staff shortage, and we're working on getting more resources for staff so we can be more committed to our DEAI goals. And I think, you know, we've made a lot of progress with this new exhibition, but it never hurts to just be like, okay, let's go back to the drawing board and see, what could we do different? What went right? What went wrong? What about all the grays and in between? And learn from these conversations and continue forward. And you know, I'm still going to advocate for living artists and you know, hopefully make more exhibitions on you know, wonderful contemporary Native art.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to sum up everything for you, but that does sound like probably one of the most important lessons here is that you took a more anthropological exhibition and made it more alive, if you will, or more fitting how we look at the world today, honestly, than we did about Native cultures in the 19th and 20th centuries. Well, shoot, 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries. But exhibitions have been mostly a 20th century thing. That it is, it has. So. I'll offer a little final statement. And first of all, I appreciate each of y'all being here. I have all kinds of ideas going in my head. You've increased not only my knowledge of process and how, but also why. Of course, what I think about is, all right, how do we do this? How do we scale this? Or how do we bring this concept to the wider world? But the most important thing I think you said toward the end is, there's no perfection here. We have to keep working at this. Progress, as Alyssa said, is a part of progress can be very slow, and it gets very frustrating. I've been there too, and I lead change from external, but change, as Alyssa said, people don't like change, but change is absolutely inevitable. And if any community understands that, it's the Native American community who has lived this vast change, with Europeans coming into America and changing things. So appreciate each of y'all for being here. Thank you for your commitment to these things and the intentionality with which you approach DEAI is important.
Thank you
for having us.
Thanks for the opportunity.